Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. On the shores of the Caspian Sea recently, Russian representatives met with representatives of Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan, Central Asian republics that were once clients of Moscow, but no longer. They're independent-minded. I've visited, and Gregory's visited, Uzbekistan. It has its eyes on the future. The same can be said for all of the Caspian Sea Basin, including Azerbaijan and Georgia. This is a rich region with big dreams because they can see prosperity. And they're midway between China and the European markets. There's opportunity here. Except, Gregory, a very good evening to you. Your latest analysis points to the Taliban being the subject of this meeting on the shores of the Caspian Sea. What is Moscow worried about? What are the Central Asian republics worried about? What is the threat of Taliban? After all, we're told that it's just a ragtag army of volunteers from Pakistan. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, my guess is that Russia's not worried about a thing. It is overjoyed with the precipitous and chaotic withdrawal of U.S. military forces and support from Afghanistan, because it means that the threat of the Taliban to the security and stability of the five Central Asian states with which the Russians just met, means that they now need to come back home to Moscow for protection, because the United States has walked away from its commitment to protect the Central Asian states. It's walked away from its commitment to open up Afghanistan to stable government and therefore allow the five Central Asian states to trade southward through Tashkent, down into Afghanistan and across to Pakistan and down to the Indian Ocean. That's all gone. So 30 years after the United States, in a sense, was presented with the gift of the Central Asian states, newly liberated from the Soviet Union, and 20 years after the United States went in and poured countless trillions of dollars and treasure and blood into fighting a war in Afghanistan, the U.S. has come away with nothing. The five Central Asian states still have no secure access to the sea. They have to go back to Russia because Russia provides them with their conduit for trade over to Europe to a large extent. So this has been a real opportunity for Russia, and this summit which the Central Asian states held on the shores of the Caspian was really good for them because they are offering security against the Taliban to those five Central Asian states.
Once upon a time, it was called the Great Game. I believe Dr. Watson returned from the Great Game. He was wounded in Afghanistan, and he met up with Sherlock Holmes, and they had another fate. However, the Great Game was played out between London and Petersburg, the capital of the Russian Empire, and the subcontinent, India, which was a client state of Great Britain, and other players in the region. The Great Game ended with the world wars of the 20th century. Is it reawakened, Gregory?
The Great Game is absolutely on again, as the point we made in our recent statement on the new centrality of Afghanistan to China, Russia, and India. Yes, the fluidity of movement of geopolitics is back literally now, almost for the first time since the end of the Great Game and since arguably this whole geopolitical competition played out between Russia and Britain starting in the 18th century and going through the 19th and 20th centuries. So this is really significant. We've got fluidity back. And what we don't have from the Western point of view is either Great Britain or the United States. Certainly Britain is rebuilding its strategic relationships with India, which is a key player, and India itself is now a new key player in the new great game, and it's getting ready to position itself to take advantage of the chaos in Afghanistan and the hostility from and with the People's Republic of China.
There's competition inside of inside, but I want to get to the biggest picture of all. Now, London is not participating, Washington is not participating, but certainly Moscow is, having replaced Petersburg. Is Beijing participating in the new great game?
Absolutely, and this is the fight for its life of the Communist Party of China. Basically, Beijing sees that it is losing its ability to get access to the Indian Ocean over land. India is threatening its linkage up through Pakistan, so it needs to go into Iran if it's to get links to the Indian Ocean through Iran and links to the Middle East through Iran. However, there is no stable land bridge between the Chinese territory and the Iranian territory. But Iran is a key player in this because Iran is literally the grand old empire of Central Asia, the Persian Empire. And Iran and the People's Republic of China in the last year or so did an ostensibly $400 billion deal to build infrastructure and to trade. Nonetheless, the People's Republic of China cannot have a direct link to Iran because they have to go through too many countries. Afghanistan is right there providing some of that linkage. And so there are several reasons for all of this. Beijing is anxious to see instability continue for a period of time in Afghanistan so that it can literally get control of a Taliban-based government, which it would support even though Moscow opposed it. Through this linkage, ideally it could get some closer land alliance to get across to Iran and down into the warm waters. So for China, the removal of the United States presence from Central Asia generally and from Afghanistan in particular is a godsend. The only thing they can hope for now is that India does not spoil this whole plan for them.
I want to keep an eye on in Moscow here. Beijing and Moscow say they're working together. Beijing and Moscow have conducted military exercises in the same direction. And every time Xi gets together with Putin, they're best buddies. Is that a false face, Gregory?
Well, it's not a false face, but it is classic Marxist theoretical philosophy. You cooperate on a superficial and a short-term means and measure, and then you work against each other in the underlying and discrete environment. And this whole behavioral doctrine created by the Soviets is called peaceful coexistence. And it's Marxist philosophy said that there is no shame in cooperating with your enemy to achieve short-term goals, provided you maintain the essential war at the discrete level.
What we have then is a map, a great game map, with different poles. And I talk about Moscow and Beijing, but there are poles within poles. Delhi and Islamabad, their adversaries have been long-term. What is their opinion of Afghanistan? Does it help Islamabad to have Pakistan tumble into anarchy, given that much of the Taliban is recruited in Pakistan?
I think it's an overstatement to say that much of the Taliban is recruited in Pakistan. Certainly, the United States activities in Afghanistan drove a lot of Afghans into exile, into the tribal areas in Pakistan, and radicalized a lot of the tribal areas. But the fact is that the Pakistanis, until the U.S. Messed it up, really, did a good job of containing the radicals in the tribal areas. Pakistan definitely wants to see some stability in Afghanistan because only through that can Pakistan help engineer that land, the rail and road linkages across Afghanistan to link up with Tashkent in Uzbekistan and get that and become that trade outlet for Central Asian goods going through the Indian Ocean and imports going through Pakistan into Central Asia.
More great game. At the moment, Tehran is occupied with the Biden administration, looking to have the sanctions lifted, looking to reawaken the JCPOA, looking to continue its campaign to the West against Israel and other actors. However, Tehran was in the original great game. What is its place here?
Well, Iran is waiting to get back into the game in a sense. It's basically constrained from being the trade conduit for the Central Asian states down into the Indian Ocean by U.S. and Western sanctions. The incoming president essentially has said, look, I'll do anything. This is President Raisi. I will do anything to get these sanctions lifted. And I think he will. I think we can see that an end to the Iranian isolation in a fewer number of years than perhaps would have been expected 6 months or a year ago. Apart from that as well, I think we can start to see Russia and the People's Republic of China cooperating to the extent of supporting five Central Asian states and Iran getting together in a trading conglomerate and allowing trade through Iran. And the U.S. has a declining ability to stop that from occurring. So basically we're seeing that there will be options for Iran to play in this great game. Iran has great reservations about Russia, of course, because Russia historically took much of Iranian territory, both in the Qajar dynasty and in up through to World War II. So even countries like Azerbaijan on the Caspian Sea, the former Persian state, and the Iranians still miffed at the Russians over that, but they will cooperate together. And so we'll start to see, if Moscow has its way particularly, the revival of a great trading bloc of Central Asian states plus Azerbaijan plus Iran. And this is going to be powerful just for internal trade, and we will start to see also a lot more trade from Central Asia to Europe, not only via Russia, but now as a result of the war in Azerbaijan last November, we'll start to see goods being able to traffic through Azerbaijan and directly into Turkey and across into Europe.
Gregory, you mentioned Azerbaijan, and when we come back, my experience in Baku is that it sees itself as the crossroads of a new and reawakened Eurasia for trade. However, China has to concern itself with who controls that crossroads. And does it have full access? Or Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're looking at the great game in the 21st century. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.